All right, so our topic for the morning is loosely the word encouragement. I said last week that probably all of us are in some way or another afflicted with under-encouragement. Let's just call it that. That there's days when you and I leave the house in the morning, or there's days that you and I come home at night and we're sort of like the proverbial dog with its tail between its legs. We're a little bit beat down, life is not going well, and we're not really passionate about living. But before we go any further, and you can read it in the notes if you'd like later, but we use this word encouragement so broadly, so frequently, and I wish there were more words that we could use. Because we use encouragement for everything from poor Johnny, his day didn't go too well. And we use the same word for somebody in the scriptures like Joshua, who is about to go into a battle the likes of which he has never experienced. In other words, encouragement is sort of one of those words that we use a little bit like we use the word love. We use it to apply to a broad variety of things, and sometimes we just dilute it and water it down to the point that it has no meaning because we don't offer any distinguishing qualities. So what is it we mean when we talk about the word encouragement? So let's just jump right into some scripture here. 2 Corinthians 10. And let me start with a question. What are you living your life for? If I were to run into you somewhere where we had 15 minutes and I were to ask you that single question, what's your life about? Do you have an answer? And you know what most people's answer would be, right? Well, I'm just going through the motions. I pay the bills. I go to work. I come home. I got a little bit of a hobby going on the side or whatever it is. Do you have a defining thing that you are living toward or for? It's the start of a new year. It's a reasonable question, actually, to ask at the beginning of a new year. If I caught up with you at a class reunion and I hadn't seen you for 20 years, what's different about the way you're living now? And I don't just mean the day-to-day, well, I gave up sugar for the new year. I don't mean that. I mean, what passionate, motivating, compelling thing gets you up every morning? Why do you go to work? Why do you come home? Do you have one of those? Now let's jump into 2 Corinthians. We're going to go to chapter 10. We'll just start at the beginning of the chapter because it seems like an easy place to begin, although we're not going to focus too much on the first few verses. I, Paul, myself entreat you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. I am humble when face to face with you, but bold toward you when I am away. Now, he makes that statement because he's been accused of being this. Well, your words are really strong. You can write a mean letter, but when you're face to face with people, you're cowering and timid. And so he just brings that right out, and there's almost a tone of sarcasm there. This is the way you think I am. So I'll introduce myself. I'm Paul the cowardly in person, but the bold in writing. And I beg of you that when I am present, I may not have to show boldness with such confidence as I count on showing against some who suspect of us of walking according to the flesh. For though we walk according to the flesh, all right, let's just back up. For those who suspect of us that we're walking according to the flesh. So what he's saying is, there's a lot of people that accuse me of being what we'll call liberal. I don't really walk according to what God would like. I've created this whole new way of living where I don't value circumcision as much, where I don't value these other things as much. You know, to us today, those are meaningless. We read these things in the scripture about times past, and we wonder why people could be hung up on them. Do you know, for years, people in the church debated about one thing and another. Was this okay? Was this right? Was this wrong? Was it, I mean, silly things. Just, frankly, in the end, dumb things. What was it okay to wear this or that kind of clothing to church? Did that reveal something about your inner character? Was it okay to have a beer with the boys on Friday night? Was it okay to have a cigar? Was it? Was this? Well, this was, and all this stuff. And actually, the stuff that the Jews are talking about with Paul is probably a little bit more serious than that. But he says, as I count on showing again, some of you expect it us of walking according to the flesh. In other words, you don't think we're really following God, genuinely. For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. So almost immediately, he flips this and he says, I'm more worried about what I'm living for than whether you're passing judgment on me about some silly thing that you think that I'm not doing. And yes, I do walk in the flesh. So I am a human being. And I am going to have human desires and human needs and human expectations. I walk in the flesh. But we are not waging war according to the flesh. And that addresses that point of boldness up at the he just introduced. So what would it look like in the minds of the people that he's talking to if you waged war according to the flesh? That's a question. The kind that you can answer now. Some of them are rhetorical, I admit, but now...
my translation is very different from yours, so when you're reading yours, mine sounds very different.
Bring me some of that.
Well, we were talking about one and two. Paul was describing himself as an unprincipled opportunist. You say I'm an unprincipled opportunist, and he says, but I'm going to tell. I tell you, they'll have to eat their words. And he talks about next verse 3. He says the world's unprincipled. It's dog eat dog world, and the world doesn't fight fair. So we don't live our battles that way. Never have, never will. Tools for trade aren't for marketing or manipulation. But they are for demolishing that entire massively corrupt culture. We use our powerful God tools for smashing work philosophies, tearing down barriers erected against the truth of God, fitting every loose thought, emotion, and impulse into the structure of life shaped by Christ. Our tools are ready at hand for clearing the ground of every obstruction building lives of obedience into maturity.
Okay, let me push the pause button because you've run three or four verses ahead at least of where I stopped off. But
maybe that's why I got lost, is that I've run ahead.
Are you using a message?
New Living Translation.
Okay. And does it have individual verses marked off?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, 3 through 6, 7 through 8, sort of.
Okay. There's nothing really in terms of quality that's different about one from the other. In other words, in terms of the general interpretation of the text, they're both saying the same thing. So I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask the question now. What does it look like to us when we wage war according to the flesh?
Oh, you fight the way they do.
Okay.
You fight the way non-Christians fight.
Which is?
Either with your hands or with your words.
Or with your words. And so he's being accused of not being bold face to face because, in other words, you're not much of a warrior. Right? You talk a good game in writing, but when it comes to actually being a bold warrior, you're not much of one. But then he goes on to say the most important thing. For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. And this is where we get into the part that you were reading. For we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ. Where does his boldness come from?
Where does his boldness come from?
Yeah.
His relationship with Christ.
Okay. So we're going to first divide encouragement into two things. Do you remember a number of weeks ago now that we introduced this idea of character and core? So character is this firewall that we build between the outer world and our inner world. Okay? And for that reason, we said that people don't really have good character or bad character. What do they have? They have strong character or weak character because they either have a strong firewall or a weak firewall. Either all the junk from outside, whatever it is, can penetrate the core, or it's weak because the bad stuff that occasionally is inside of us. Have you ever gotten mad and known you should have been quiet even though you were mad but not been quiet? That's when your firewall was weak and the bad stuff came out. So we either have a strong character or a weak character. Now inside of that is our core. This is what we call the heart. Now, what's the core made of? What is the heart made of? We said there are two things that define the heart. Yeah, that's one of them. What we know. Nice job, incidentally, in a room full of people who look like they're paying attention. Anybody else? What we understand. In other words, what we do with what we know. So knowledge and understanding make up the core of who we are, and out of what we know and what we come to understand come the next two things, which are what we believe and what we value. So what we come to know and how we process that so that we understand it is our intellectual and spiritual core. From that, we develop our beliefs and our values. These are the things that we stand for, the things that we fight for, the things that we live for, our beliefs and our values. And our character protects them. Now, in light of that, can you see how Paul is saying, you judge me by what you see going out in the outer world? I want to tell you that most of the fight takes place in the inner world. Now, there's two components to character, and it's why we began here with a discussion about what is essentially spiritual warfare. There's two places where Paul introduces essentially the same theme and uses similar terminology. You can turn over to the other ones. It's in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, so that we get to there in a minute. There are two components to encouraging people. We're going to look at them now in this Ephesians text.
Have you ever seen somebody who you thought, like, man, they got a lot of character, they got a lot of character, but they got pushed to a place where they lost that character? And what was really inside came out? I mean, like, I had a conversation with somebody, a buddy of mine who was an entrepreneur, before I leave. A buddy of mine at work has an issue in his esophagus. They don't know what it is. And he is that guy. And he's been trying to keep it together, keep it together, keep it together. You know, we're a rough bunch of group of people. You know? So I told the other guys, he left yesterday, he's not emotionally on the ground to say. And so I grabbed the guys together, I said, hey, leave him alone. You can't jerk him around anymore until he knows what's going on. Because he's doing a really good job of not kicking the life out of you guys when you lay it in. Because he doesn't know what's going on yet. So leave him alone for a minute so that you don't tear down that thing that lets the real light come out. Because if he hits you, you're going to the hospital. You know, so I had to have that conversation where, hey, leave him alone. Because that wall might be slowly...
And there are things in our daily life that will start to erode this. We essentially live in life as an acid bath, and there are things that we experience on a day-to-day basis that are going to tend to erode the character. Therefore, if we're not reinforcing it, it's like a protective wall. And if we're not doing things to reinforce it, we don't just have to improve what we know and how we understand it. We don't just have to critique what we believe and what we value. We have to build this firewall and perpetually, exactly the same as your antivirus on your computer from 5 years ago is probably not very effective today. Right? They've developed a few new bad things in the meantime. And that's exactly the same way with each of us. And so when somebody experiences something that challenges this on the inside, like you're saying, I thought God was trustworthy and now I'm dealing with, and I've never processed this particular experience before. I don't know how to understand this new experience, and it's likely to influence what comes out.
Nehemiah said, I have to do one thing, rebuild the wall. I just have to rebuild the wall. I have to get them to a place where they can at least feel
So incidentally, when we tend to, as human beings, pass judgment on someone because they look like they were all calm and cool and collected, and then they're thrown into a new situation, and all of a sudden they explode. And remember what Jesus says, that things reveal what's in the heart, and out of your mouth comes the things that are actually in your heart. That doesn't mean that you're automatically all bad. What it means is there are parts of you that are grappling to understand something that you have never experienced, and you're not doing it well. I've never had this happen personally, but I'm told that when you're anesthetized and go into surgery, that apparently a lot of your mental filters go away. And it's surprising what people say in surgery. And not surprising in a good way, usually.
Yeah, I work in an OR.
So this is true, then?
It is absolutely true.
Okay.
Not to make you fearful of anything, because, you know, what happens in the OR stays in the OR.
So it's like Las Vegas, then, the OR. All right. Everybody over to Ephesians 6 now? Okay. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. All right, now, if you grew up in church and you saw some of those cheesy illustrations with the guy in the Roman garb and he's got the flowing hair and the little tassel, and just forget all that nonsense, okay? That is just, there's some component of it. And if you didn't grow up in the church, you don't understand the weird crap that we had to deal with, okay? So just, you don't even want to know, okay? You hear what he said? Amen. This is real stuff. When you think of armor, what do you think of? So we focus on this soldier and he's all dressed up for battle. What is armor?
Protection.
Yeah. So most of what this guy spends, however long it takes him, and it probably takes him a little while every morning to suit up, cinch it all down, tighten it all up. Ooh, looks like I ate a little too much last night, got to undo this buckle a little bit. Right? And when it's all there, what is that all designed to do? It's all designed for one thing, to protect him.
And in the Renaissance, the knights had a squadron help them put it on, because they couldn't do it themselves. It was too heavy.
Isn't that a great illustration? Once again, Jim runs ahead of me, but he's running in the right direction, and so I'll catch up with him sooner or later.
What's he here? I don't want to blow your stuff up.
It's okay. Just give me some credit here and there. Yes, we are. We absolutely are. And so there are two reasons why we need encouragement. Okay? You need help to make sure that you've got the... This is the armor, all right? In case you're in what you're reading, this is the armor. So forget all the goofy Sunday school flannel graph stuff. Remember it like this. You need to deal with this every day. And then he goes into some specifics. What are the components of your life that need armoring? Now, you can read that on your own. Here's what I want to focus on. All of this gets you equipped, but what does it get you equipped for? Whose battle? Remember how I opened this? I asked a question. What was the question?
Can you listen and talk at the same time?
Well, yes. You know, you gotta hate it when he's right, don't you? Okay, after that, I asked another question. Are you living for anything this year? You know, we spend a lot of time talking about this stuff as if this is the end game. This is not the end game. This is just getting yourself suited up for the day. But if you don't have anything to go out and do for the day, then you're just carrying around a lot of baggage. And there's a lot of irritable, crumpy, judgmental Christians that are just walking around with their armor on, but they have no idea what they're walking around for. Don't point at me unless you want to say something. What do you want to say?
I do, but I didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, there's more happening, it turns out.
But the reason you just said the thing is they're wandering. Nobody's ever placed them in a position where they say, hey, you, know what? I can use you. Come with me. I have something to do. Come with me. I have an idea to start something. Let's hang out for a minute. You know what I mean? And that's... I didn't have a ministry when I came here. I started out ushering when we were in that building. You know what I mean? And there was an encouragement. It was from the most...
Were you really an usher? I don't remember that.
The encouragement was... some dude.
People
up.
Came back?
Some dude walking up, and I see it every once in a while. I'm back here, but some dude walking up, he smoked up with ink and everything. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. these are my people. And he's like, all right, long hair and tattoos, I can go here. And it was an encouragement. And I was like, okay, well, I need to be here then so that my people know that it's okay to come here. You know, and so it started that. And now the ministry that I've been gifted to be in charge of is a flourishing ministry. And it's my focus point. It's the thing that I do, you know. So that's kind of, when I see guys here, I think, like, when I come in here, I go, well, what's he doing? And what's he doing? Well, I know where he's at, and I know where he's at, and I know where he's at, because they're with me. But what is he doing? What's his ministry? What does he do on Thursday nights? What does he do on Saturday mornings? What does he do on Friday night? Is he out there trying to, you know what I mean?
Well, so let's come back to that right now.
Focus.
There are two components to encouragement. So we generally look at encouragement as, yeah, you can do it. You can do that extra 3 push-ups. You can do that extra. Okay, and I'm not saying that's not useful. But there's really two components that we need to focus on. What do you need to protect you for battle? And what do you need to inspire you to fight for something? You need protection to go into battle, but if you have no inspiration, no guidance, no understanding, what are you fighting for? So I'm going to come back and ask the question again, are you living for anything significant this year? Remember how I asked it? I said, if you had 15 minutes, if I hadn't seen you in a while, if I cornered Jim somewhere, he could tell me for 30 minutes, okay? But he could. He could have a elevator speech times 10 that he would share with me.
The amazing thing about that part of it is that most of us take high school and we reduce it to 2 or 3 sentences. We take college and it's 1 sentence. And then the 3 kids is reduced to about 4 sentences. So we have the ability to do that. It's just, what's the content? Like you say, have 10 minutes. Go. What's the content? Well, I don't remember back in high school. What's changed?
I'm going to introduce something that I'm just going to borrow from Andy Stanley. I've shared this with Scott already, but he started out the new year, and he does presentations for his church, and then he does a separate set of presentations that go on to a television show that's broadcast in the Atlanta area. They're two different presentations. And so to the thing that's broadcast to the Atlanta area, he starts the new year with this. Most people, he says, live their lives starting on the new year and they make New Year's resolutions. The problem is that most people's New Year's resolutions are all about improving them. Now, there's nothing wrong with getting more fit. There's nothing wrong with eating healthier. There's nothing wrong with reading more, watching less television. There's nothing wrong with any of that stuff. How many of you, at least in the past, maybe you've given up on them, have you ever made a New Year's resolution? Okay. How many of those New Year's resolutions, in all honesty, were about, I want to serve more there? How many of you have ever made a New Year's resolution like that? Okay, 1. And it's not surprising. Most people don't. He says, oh, most of our New Year's resolutions, I promise, I will come back to you. Most of our New Year's resolutions are all about, how do I make me better? And here's his question. What if you took the focus off of you and you said, what area in the world, what area in my world makes me hurt to the point that I'm willing to do something about that and step out and do something about that? Whatever it is, he's first. I'm sorry. He's wordy, but he's first. I will get to you.
My comment about being like, no good, that's not fair. You praise that every day. Yes, it's his New Year's resolution to serve, but he prays that every day to serve. I know it.
It's okay. It's absolutely 100% fine to think about that, but there's nothing wrong with improving yourself in order to help you fight that battle. So in other words, if you're going to go out and do something with the homeless, then maybe you should learn about a little bit more about the homeless. So when you improve yourself in that area, it's just like when you're in the airplane and you're sitting next to a kid. Who do you put the oxygen mask on first? Not the kid. You got to help yourself
right
first, because otherwise you're going to be useless to that child if you can't breathe.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's a valid point. If you improve yourself in the area of that battle that you're going to go out and fight, all fine and well. But I understand your point about, yeah, not me. That
not only that.
Well, at the end of being more physically fit, at the end of a year of abstaining from apple pie or whatever it is, at the end of that year, what do you do with that?
Who does that on their own? No one. If you're by yourself, that resolution goes out the window for 2 weeks. You need an accountability person. So what you say to you, sir, you go show up somewhere.
Check the man's trash. There are probably apple pie containers buried at the bottom of the trash can.
So I show up here and I say, oh, I thought I was going to be by myself. I was kind of afraid to walk in. But there's all of you. Which one of you is going to say, come and follow me? I want to show you a man who told me everything about myself.
You're slipping.
So when you're talking like that, it's not like you show up somewhere alone or you show up somewhere to, you know what I mean? When you show up, there's almost always someone there, at least one.
Here's this simple phrase in the center of the front page. No soldier goes to battle alone. I mean, think about that. But what do you and I do?
Try.
We do. And it's a big deal, truthfully, it's a big deal to get a group of people in a room together, even like this, to talk about life. Do you know why? Because most of us are so consumed with living our ordinary, everyday lives, we just don't give a rip about a bigger battle. That's just pretty much the way it is.
And I don't care how big you are. Goliath was slain by a teenager. It doesn't matter how big you are. You too can be injured in battle, wounded, and useless. Because you didn't have anybody there to help you. You thought you had it all. I can do this. I got this. No, you don't.
So if you want to, the goal, the end game here, is that each of us become more effective encouragers at things that matter. Okay? That's the end game. So we not lose sight of that and go off into the weeds somewhere and never come back. You, in the year 2016, want to become a more effective encourager. That means you need to know what encouragement actually is. So encouragement bolsters the strength of this circumference, this character, this firewall that we build around ourselves. You're getting weak there. I know you. There's a weakness. You know your buddy that's experiencing the problems, right? You know the point at which there's some chink in that armor, and if somebody pushes there, it's in trouble, right? But in addition to that, you also need to know, exactly like Jim said, how to inspire others to act out of what they know and believe to address some hurt, some pain, some need in the outside world. So if you just walk up to people every day and say, my, you're looking great, I'm glad to see you, you may be adding a layer of fluff to that.
Well, to the point, when I talk to Michael, I say, you know, Mike, you claim to be a believer, you have that stamp in your arm. I said, but are you ready? Are you ready to meet the creator of heaven and earth? Are you ready? Should that be the case? Are you ready? Well, you know, and he tries to like downplay it. No, Michael, are you ready to do that? Because if you're not, that's the part that's missing here. It's why you're so freaked out. It's why you're so scared. Because you don't know that. I'm ready. Should I not be able to work today? Ready. But he doesn't know that.
So okay, I'm going to put the pause button on you.
So I have to tell him.
No, I'm not. Doesn't work.
No, so I have to tell him. Mike, no matter what, I'll be right here. No matter how this goes down, I'll be right here. And we will deal with this. Don't worry about your deductible. Don't worry about how much you owe, because he lives by himself. Don't worry about those things. You worry about that. You get ready.
Okay, can I push the button now? Okay.
I just need to end that.
And you did it well. You're on fire this morning, man. It's good. It's good. Okay. We all just heard that. How many of you would say that sounded like encouragement, honestly? Would that make you feel good on the inside? Or would it make you a little bit angry and upset, maybe? Just be honest, right? That doesn't sound very much like encouragement, but in reality, if you want to address the center issues of a person's life, that's exactly what they needed to hear, and that is encouragement. Can you do that well? Not, my, you're looking nice today. I mean, I'm not saying men do that, but women do that. But that is not encouragement. That's just insincere flattery. What, he doesn't look nice today? He's a lot bigger than you, buddy. He'll be looking less than nice by the end of the day.
That's character.
Don't fall prey to the lie that Satan tells us from the beginning. Did God really say that? We can put this armor on, but do we really believe that it protects us in battle? If we're not in battle and we got armor on, it just makes us awkward.
That's right. That's what we're saying. So we need both. You need protection. You need something to fight for.
Well, David took it all off. He said, I need a fucking old strap on.
He had artificial armor on. He had the armor of the world on, thinking that it would protect him. That, okay.
I mean, we're talking about spiritual armor here.
Right.
So, I mean, the metaphor of armor in the sense of a breastplate or something, you know, that's a physical thing. So, if somebody hits you with a sword or whatever, it's not. But this whole chapter of Ephesians, if God's telling you what this armor means. I mean, he says the breastplate of God's approval. Are you a follower of Jesus Christ? Do you have His approval and God's approval? That's your breastplate. He tells you about shoes that, let me look here, shoes that are the good news of peace with God. And He's saying, you know, be swift, speak the word, talk to folks, tell them about the Lord Jesus Christ. Be quick. And He goes on even more. The helmet of salvation. Are you set for salvation? I mean, this is a question you're asking. Are you ready? Or are you, I think we're asking, are you ready to meet your Maker? Do you have confidence that you have salvation? Do you have that helmet of salvation? That you're so strong that you can go out and influence another human being to bring them closer to Jesus Christ. And it talks about faith here. In every battle, you will need faith as your shield to stop the fiery arrows aimed at you by Satan. So this is very spiritual.
All right, let me just stop you right there, because that's ultimately where we're headed with this, which ties what he said to what you said. Do we really believe? When I leave the house every morning, do I really believe in anything? How much doubt does it take in order for you to be less bold than you could be?
Just a little.
It does, right? I mean, just a hint. And you just start to temper things. And I'm not saying... Listen, we've all seen annoying Christians, right? Show of hands, how many have seen an annoying Christian? How many are glad they're not that kind of Christian? How many would not be a Christian if their first encounter with a Christian was with that Christian? Yes, we all know that. That's not boldness, that's stupidity. Okay, let's just be real there. But on the other hand, and some things are very understated. You see, I don't need to know what you're doing in life. I don't need to know the good work that you're doing. It's not boldness in the sense of showiness. It's not boldness in the sense of brashness. As a matter of fact, Paul talks about the difference in the chapter on love, which we didn't get to yet. He talks about the difference between love and arrogance. Right? There's a lot of people that are just flat out arrogant in their faith. They hold their faith in an arrogant way. That's just ugly and unattractive. So that's not what we're talking about. I'll just share an experience. I was kind of tempted not to do this, but I'll share an experience from yesterday. It was weird because this kind of stuff doesn't normally happen to me. I forget. Oh, was it with you?
Yeah, we had breakfast yesterday.
Yeah, and didn't the guy at the cashier say, the checkout guy say, I went into... Yeah, okay. So after you left, the guy's a Muslim. He says, I want to tell you something. And he knows me because I'm in there all the time. And he sees me with John and he sees me with other people from the church here and all that. And says, I don't know why he singled me out, but for some reason I guess he just had this bubbling up desire to share this with me. And he starts telling me about this weird dream that he had in Egypt. And this thing going on at the top of some church in Egypt and how he's hanging on to this cross and all that. And then he says, you know, I'm not a really religious guy. And he says, but I'm kind of embracing of all faiths. And he says, and he goes on and on with all this usual stuff. And he says, and I don't know what to do with this. And I'm not even sure, he says, why I told you this. But I just wanted to tell somebody this. And I said the only thing that I could think to say at a time like that. I said, well, look, let's talk more about it at a time, because he's working and I'm on my way to go somewhere. And I know where he works and I can come back to him again. I said, let's get coffee sometime. Which would be a very natural thing for him, since he sees me in that diner all the time having coffee with other people. So I left there. I went to the gym. And I thought, I should do something more about this. And I'm just thinking, what do I need to do? What could I do? And so finally I decided, you know what I'm going to do? And I went down to a local bookstore and I rummaged around until I found a copy of The Message, which I thought, okay, this reads a little bit more like normal human language instead of like some Bibles do. And so I took that. And then I took it out of the box that it came in, and I asked the guy, do you have a plain bag that I could put this in? Because it's weird when you walk into some places and hand somebody a Bible, and I don't want the guy to be uncomfortable and weirded out by the whole thing. So I tried to do it as low-key as possible and put a little note in there, and I said, start reading some here if you'd like, and maybe we can get together about it and talk sometime. And that was the end of it. The point is this. I really didn't want to tell you that, but I had no other example that I could latch on to quickly that would illustrate nobody needs to know about what you're doing. Nobody needs to know about the bold thing that you're doing out there. You just have to have the boldness to go off and do it by yourself. And honestly, if it is kind of done off in the shadows where most people aren't knowing about it, you will need more encouragement, because you're not going to get a lot of human praise for it. Did that mean something? Bring me more of that. Why not what?
Tell people what you're doing. You don't have to be a dick about it. But tell people what you're doing, because they don't know you're doing it. They don't know that that's what you do.
No, that's true.
Let me talk for a second. You don't have to. They don't know that you're talking to people. Probably 5 nights a week you take somebody to coffee to talk with them. I was one of those people, and if it wasn't for you, I might not be here. Because we talked about some pretty serious things. Ministry stuff. Things that we can do. Church leadership. We talked about some serious stuff. And so people need to know that that is what you do, but they don't need to know it arrogantly. Like, hey, $20 going in. $20 going in. No, you put it in the offering quietly. You don't have to be flashy about what you do. But people, every guy even needs to know that you take somebody to coffee probably 4 nights a week. And so why not? I need to know that so that I know how to do this. Because otherwise I don't know how to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have a focus point. There's no direction for me to go. There's no teacher. If I don't have a teacher, I'm going to wander too.
I think it's fine to tell people, you know, what you're doing. If you're so compelled to do it, there might be some work the Lord is trying to do that compels you to do something. But it's a fine line. It's a slippery slope. You don't want to tell what you're doing behind the scenes as you're talking to puff yourself up. I mean, it clearly states in the Bible that, you know, and I struggle with this all. I've struggled with this for years. I'm one of these personalities that can be a little overwhelming in business situations and such. And the arrogance, if you do well, you know, kind of comes along with the territory. You have to work on being humble. And I think if you can work on that and not try to make yourself feel better because of the work you're doing, that comes naturally, but don't work at trying to puff yourself up. It's a lot more effective. You feel good about yourself. And there are times you will tell people, you know, I helped somebody on parallel, or I helped somebody do this. And sometimes that's just to help someone understand the definition of what you're trying to do for the Lord. But it's a fine line. To me,
Vinny, all right, I'll come back to Vinny. You want to say something? Go ahead.
I was going to say, at the end of the day, your results are going to speak for yourself. I think that's why I see where Glenn is saying, like, you don't have to say, you don't have to talk about what you're doing, because at the end of the day, the guy at the diner, I'm assuming it's John's diner.
It is.
He sees you going in for coffee every day with different guys, so he understands that you're getting results by helping them. So that's why he went up to you. It's like, hey.
Okay, well, let's get the focus off of me. That was enough about me for a moment. Okay, so when when Vinny tells a story on Saturday morning, I don't assume Vinny is boasting about himself, okay? But what I like about the way Vinny tells a story is it makes me go back and think in my own life, I'm not going to do what Vinny does, I'm not going to do it the way Vinny does, but am I bringing as much passion and intensity to what I do and the way I do it as Vinny is to what he's doing? And so in that way, Vinny sharpens me by reminding me of the good thing that he is doing in his unique sphere of influence. And that's what I think we need to do. And the reason that this is kind of done, I said that you might not know. Listen, this is why we need encouragement, because you're probably not going to get it from the people out there. You and I need encouragement to continue to be bold and strong in what we do that nobody's knowing about.
Well, they'll encourage you to do wrong. They'll encourage you to go in the other direction. Why do we even bother with that nonsense?
Well, here's the thing, right? If nobody knew that you were doing the good work, nobody would know if you stopped. Think about that. And so we need to have at least enough information so we can continue to encourage you in the good stuff.
You probably define my thought a little better, but you know, use Vinny as an example. There are times you want to tell people what you're doing because it does make you shudder. That's what I was saying about you'll be compelled to tell certain people. I think it's kind of like a natural thing. If you really fall on board, he kind of like pushes you this way or that way. And it's to help someone be better. But there are times you don't want to say anything also. That's that fine line I'm talking about pumping yourself up. Because we all know Christians that are very enthusiastic and sometimes, you know, almost boastful. And I think that's crossing the line. That's to me personally. Because we need to keep that in the back of our minds. Because the Lord does want us to be humble.
And that's where accountability teams come in. I have guys I call. I don't call Jim to say, hey, I got to run to the store and get milk. I call Jim when I'm struggling with something. I know Jim will speak truth and love into my life. Same thing with Glenn.
Probably in that order, too, right?
And that's what I'm willing to accept. It's not always encouragement that, hey, I love you, and let's go pet some fluffy bunnies.
What is it in encouragement, though? When you and I can talk directly to one another and you tell me, don't do that. That's not how we do it. I don't know. You know, it's we talk to each other the way we need to be talked to. Because maybe Chris doesn't need to be talked to like that. Maybe Glenn can't be talked to like that. He needs a different one. My wife and I have to send that. I go. If they need a hug, they talk to Barbara. Because she's grace personified. If they need the food, they talk to me. Because I'm going to tell you how it is. And this is how it is. And that's it. And that's there's different kinds of encouragement for different situations. But the trebuchets aren't going to stop. They're going to keep trying to tear down that wall of character that you're trying to build. You keep trying to build, and the world keeps sending lob it in the stones. That's why it's imperative that you get in here. Because if you're not in here, that wall's coming down. If you're not in here on Saturday morning, we'll even say, hey, you know what? You can do that. I know you can do that because I know you. That wall's coming down. And when that wall comes down,
okay. We can't say things behind your back if you don't leave first, Jim. Okay? All right. All right. So let's move on to a couple of new things. How do we encourage through words? And we're on the back side of the first page now. We speak to inspire people's faith. What does that mean? I mean, that sounds like a really nice thing. Right? Doesn't that sound very Christian-y? We speak to inspire people's faith. What does that mean? Okay. What's the opposite of faith?
Fear.
Doubt.
Fear and doubt. So we speak into people's lives. If we're going to build up their faith, what are we speaking to? Their
fear.
And?
Doubt.
There you go. We're addressing their fear and doubt. That means, I think it's on the list, before I can be an encourager, what do I have to be? I have to be a listener. How do I know what you fear? How do I know where you doubt unless I first listen to you? Right? Have you ever been encouraged by someone who came up and gave you a shovel load of crap that they thought was encouraging, but they knew nothing about you? Right? How did you feel when you left? Don't look at me like you're confused, okay? We can talk this way. This is real life, all right? Huh?
You marry her. Just put it out there.
Okay.
That's okay. It's like Las Vegas. It's
I have to listen to you long enough and ask good enough questions of you. Most people don't even know how to do that well. Before I can encourage you, I have to know you, because your firewall is broken at a different place than mine. Your knowledge is weak. Your understanding is weak. What you value is different. I have to listen to understand you before I can speak into your life. Don't be in too much of a hurry to speak into people's lives until you listen to where they are and get to understand them. Which means what? It's time consuming. It means that the number of people that you are genuinely going to be able to encourage is limited to the available time that you have to build into people. Okay, we speak to and act to dispel the belief in isolation. Now, this is something that we can do together. You offer part of your life to other people. You offer to assure them that you can meet with them. You come and you stand by them. You know, sometimes just the presence of somebody without any words is enough. As a matter of fact, sometimes I really don't want your words. Your presence is more than enough. When encouraging words are not. No one needs sappy cliches. And so just so that we really double down on understanding this, think about something that someone said to you, and you know they meant it to help you, but if anything, you left more angry and frustrated after they said it than if they wouldn't have said anything. Do you feel that moment? Don't be that guy. That's all you need to remember about it. Don't be that guy. People need inspired words which are genuine and true, and that's why I love what Jim brings, a unique perspective. I think we'd all agree on that. Sometimes Jim brings a lot of his perspective when he comes, but he brings a forthright and candid perspective. We need some of that. All right, let me see if there's any really important ones here. Okay, yeah, here's another one. Number four, words can't fix everything. Now, don't you wish words could fix stuff? Right, somebody just lost somebody, right? Somebody died, something horrible happened. Somebody was in a catastrophic accident and in some way they're physically never going to be the person they were before. Words fall short there. Not surprisingly, I did some Googling last night while I was finishing up some of these notes, and I thought, well, let me just see what, if I type in the word encouragement, what comes up. And, there's 1,000 lame posters that show up, and there's all this. It's no wonder, I'll tell you, it's no wonder Christians have a bad name. Because there is some of the goofiest, weirdest crap out there that is attributed to what God thinks about things. And it's all filled with kittens and bunnies, too, really, to his point. It is. It's bad phrases next to pictures of kittens and bunnies. Do you remember God's encouragement to Joshua? It was not a kittens and bunnies moment. Be very courageous. Be very strong. God didn't say, wouldn't you just like a hug? No. And what was it? It wasn't, and I'll sit here with you forever. It was, this is our time together. God is saying to Joshua, we are going to thrash this out, and I'm telling you what you need to know, because tomorrow you are going out there, and if what's in here is not right, when you go out there, you are not only risking losing that out there, there are thousands upon thousands of people that are looking to you for leadership. There's another element, right? Who are you leading? Who is looking to you for leadership? Who is following you? And if you melt down, they melt down with you. That's huge. Remember what we have said repeatedly in here. People trust what you know about God and learn to trust God only later. When anybody new comes to Christ, they don't really come to Christ. They come to you who knows Christ. And gradually they get to know Christ and they rely less on you and more on Christ personally. That's just the way it works. You see the example in the scriptures as well. People bring people to Christ. Why do the people come? Because the people trust the people. So when people are leaning into trusting you and you melt down, their faith goes along with yours. That's just how important it is. Sorry, I got excited there. Let's turn over to Hebrews. Third chapter, 12th verse. Take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. All right, so who's he talking to? Presumably talking or writing to people who already do believe. And so what's he suggesting? The belief yesterday, solid belief yesterday, is not any assurance of belief today. Have you ever been tempted to walk away from what you believe? The longer you have been a follower of Christ, the more opportunity you will have to walk away. If you've only been a follower of Christ for 3 months, maybe you don't understand. It's all roses and cupcakes yet, and you don't understand why anybody would ever walk away. If you've been a follower of Christ for 30 or 40 years, you will have had abundant opportunity to walk away. So he's not talking about this is all once and done. No, every day you have an opportunity to turn your back on Christ and on what you say you believe. In exactly the same way as, and this is why we say, generally speaking, one of the best analogies, one of the best metaphors for understanding our relationship that we have with God through Christ is marriage. Every one of you has an opportunity to go home today and get a divorce. Right? You can. I'm not saying you should. I mean, you should have seen Scott, his eyes brighten up. You mean I couldn't do that?
Glenn told me I could.
Let's not delude ourselves. We have the choice. And we also have the choice to remain married. You can turn and walk away from God. That is your choice. And so according to the writer here, if that is a choice, what's going to contribute to it? An evil and unbelieving heart. Where does that come from? Because presumably at one time there was something in the heart. Remember what the heart is. This is the heart. What we just diagrammed right here a little while ago, this is the essence of the heart. We said the heart is the seat of reason and decision making. So let's actually plug that in there. Take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil and unbelieving seat of your decision making. Now presumably at one time there were things in your heart that helped you to decide for Christ. In the same way, there can be things that infiltrate through this breach somewhere that prompt you to say, maybe I was misguided in my belief. Maybe there's more gain to following something else than to following Christ. You know what? You might be the last one to know that what's changed. That's why we need each other. You might be the last one to discover that things have been happening in the inner. Other people around you. Have you ever noticed that other people can tell when you're in a bad mood sometimes before you do? You know what I'm talking about. Don't look at me like you don't understand, okay? You understand.
This is the third time I've gotten you coffee and I just feel unappreciated, by the way.
Okay. We're saving our encouragement here for real and important. Well, oh, okay, whoops. thank you very much, Brother John.
Don't mention it, that's
right. It might not be sincere, but at least flattery is better than no compliment at all, right?
You know, this chapter, I think more is a warning. I don't know if you agree, but...
You speak up a little, please.
Yeah, I take this chapter more as a warning, because as you go after people to change them, what he's saying, be careful of your own heart, that you're not influenced by evil and such. And so, you know, you don't want to be blinded by the glamour of sin. So I think, to me, this is the way I interpret it. It's more, this chapter he's talking about warning you, and we're faithful to the end, trusting in God, just as we did when we first became Christians. We will share in all that belongs to Christ. So, you know, this ties into your faith, your hope, everything that you believe Christ gave you when you first became a Christian. You need to have all that work in symphony. And that's how you can be successful. And I'm no expert on it, but I mean, I truly believe that you need all that. You know, we're talking about armor, all that, to really be effective as a Christian helping another Christian. And that's how I particularly take that chapter. I think he's just saying, you know, be aware of your own heart. Because this is a spiritual war. Okay? I mean, everything we talked about today, if you really read those chapters, we're talking about a spiritual war with Satan. Okay? Pretty nasty guy. We've all dealt with him. And he can influence you in ways because he's a liar of all liars. He's the father of lies. Okay? So, I also believe that the closer you come to Christ, you are more of a target. I truly believe that. I'm living it right now. And he'll come down on you really, really hard. And it's only through your faith that you can make it through. And it'll make you stronger, whatever you learn. But that's how I take that chapter. I take a little bit of a warning from God saying, be a little careful of your own heart because you're going to go through some rough times and you're up against evil. But if you think of yourself like when you first accepted Christ, he'll give you all that. He'll give you everything that he promised you when you accepted him. And that gives you the strength. That gives you the strength to put on the armor to go out and do exactly what, I don't even know this guy's name, to do exactly what he's talking about. That gives you the strength. And it's only through Jesus Christ. So I just wanted to, you know, that's my take on that.
Okay.
I think it's a good thing.
So, let's talk about your mission out here. Have you ever started something and it's been a while and it hasn't produced any fruit? Have you ever begun a good work and it seems it's beginning and it's beginning and it's beginning and it's beginning and there's nothing noticeable out here? This is part of the assault on the heart then. The longer you are out in a bad situation, and as a matter of fact, have you ever entered a bad situation to try to make it good, and if anything, the bad situation went from bad to worse? Right? What does that do to your faith? Let's just be honest. Every day you go out, you try to do the right thing, you try to wrestle with things, and go out into the world and do... And we're not talking about the world in a negative way. You're just going out into real life, and you're trying to address real problems, and you're trying to bring the hope and the help of Christ to certain things, right? But you're the tangible, physical representation of that hope and help. So you go out there, bad things happen. You're intimately connected with this, right? There is part of who you are and what you love that is tied to this, right? Remember what Stanley said, where do you hurt? Right? You hurt because you see something broken. Therefore, there's an emotional connection between this out here and this in here. And what happens when you love this and you try to fix this and nothing gets better? What happens in there?
Question your faith.
And it's not just that you question your faith. Your faith is simply something that is addressed towards something. So what are you really questioning? Is God able? Is God capable? Have I misunderstood my mission? Am I wasting my time? Oh, come on, help me fill in the rest of them. Come on, we've all experienced this. What else?
Is he really with me?
What else?
I think that pretty much sums it up. I mean, is he there or is he not?
And it's at those times, I'm going to get right back to you, it's at those times when we need each other. Right? We've talked about this before. But the human imagination is incredible, is it not? How many stories have you told yourself about the life that was going to happen to you tomorrow that never happened? Right? There's a movie running in your mind 18 hours a day at least. And then you go to sleep and there's a different movie running in your mind and you just don't even know what it is.
We have to question ourselves too. What are our motives? Something for ourselves? Or is something that we really think we have to do?
But so in one way or another, there's a lot of heart work that takes place. That was a good contribution. All right, let's see what we left out. All right, how do we encourage indeed? Because sometimes words aren't enough. Right? And James talks about that. And I hate to keep bringing up the same, I almost want to say tired scriptures. But the reason we use them is because they're true. And we want to simply apply them in the most practical of ways. Sometimes your words are not the encouragement that people need. Right? If they need $100 to fix their problem, they don't need your words of encouragement. They need your $100. Well, that's just the way it is. Right? I mean, James actually, for the time that he's writing, is pretty practical about it. You know, don't tell somebody, God go with you when they're hungry. Give them some freaking food to eat. Right? They don't care about your God and their being well and all that. They're hungry. So sometimes that's what we need. So stop right now. What have you ignored that you know you should have addressed? Just think about that. What do you know that you could have done something about that you rationalized in your own mind that you were too tired, too broke, too distracted, too whatever, you didn't have time to address it? And there's times when that's true, okay? You can't stop and help 10 people with flat tires on the way to work. Why? Because you won't have work to go to tomorrow, right? And the people that are on the side of the road then won't have their tires fixed. That was humor. You can laugh. But you could possibly stop and help one person. And that's a cheesy, lame example. I know that. Have you ever...
That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, if you can possibly do it, then you got to do it. And I just want to bring up a point. I did stood in for one of our pastors in church that was on vacation. And I gave a message. I said, you know, when you see somebody in need and you can possibly help them... Well, on the way home from church that day, there was a lady stuck on top of the hill in the middle of the lane. Her car broke down. And I'm thinking to myself, Nancy, if you don't stop, you're the biggest jackass in the world because you just preached on it. So I was able to...
Don't you hate that when you just got done talking about something and then you got to go live it? And then you look to the left and the right to see if anybody that you just talked to is watching, right?
Well, it was 25 miles. Fuck. The fact of the matter is, sometimes when you're thinking about that stuff, you know, you get that put in front of you, and God says, okay, big shot, let's see what you're going to do. You know, mess up and get out of here.
Isn't that a great example, though, right? It puts it to the test. And haven't we all failed the test? And the issue isn't that we all leave here feeling beat down and beat up. The issue is, okay, tomorrow you have another opportunity to pass the test that you've set for yourself. This is a standard that I choose to live by from now on, and I'm going to try to live that way. You can't do everything, but you can do something. And we won't be using any starfish examples this morning. It's an inside joke, only a few of us understand. All right. So we've done the encouraging indeed part. Oh, here's another one. Number 7, the second page. We lead the way or initiate the charge in the life of another person. So there are tons of television shows that speak to this very thing. The person is dysfunctional in some area of their life, and an outside person comes in and functions as a life coach and gets them started on the right path, right? They live in clutter and chaos, and the outside person comes in and helps them get started on an orderly system of managing their personal possessions. They eat horribly. They don't do anything to care for themselves physically, and some outside person. Here's what's happening. In that moment, an outside force is becoming the personal discipline for the person who has none in that area. We do that with children. And we think that when people grow up, that they acquire all the self-discipline that they need to live life. So how many of you, from personal experience, can attest to the fact that there's at least one area in your life where you struggle with self-discipline? Okay. What we're all admitting is that in some area of life, we could potentially use the benefit of another person who is disciplined in that area and invite them into our life to help them, to help us, to guide us in that area. Sometimes you and I need to initiate the charge that becomes the change in somebody else's life because they're weak in that area. Now it's kind of a delicate situation. They sort of have to invite us into that. You can't barge into somebody else's living room and say, "Wow, your place is a mess. Let me help you with this." Well, you could, but... Sometimes, though, when we're weak, we're fearful, we don't want... Right? Who wants to be the one... If you have a messy living room, and this is, again, a silly example, because it's a safe example, there's areas of our lives that are a lot more dysfunctional and broken than a messy living room. Sometimes, I'm embarrassed, you're embarrassed, to invite somebody into that living room situation. People that we get to know, and they get to know us over a period of time, to be an encourager to them, to truly make a difference in their life, either to address this or this, we need to have the courage to step in there.
Sometimes it takes your boldness to be able to confront that person, because that person that's hiding behind that is not comfortable sharing any of that and all that. But if you can come to them in love and everything and say, you know, "I'm willing to come in here and help you," and all that, or even just picking that first piece of thing up and saying, "All right, let's go," and all that, it speaks a lot more than waiting for somebody to say, "I need help," and all that. Sometimes it takes your action to get that person to say, "All right, I think I might be ready to work on this now."
I'm really glad you said that. He gets that. All right, when do we need encouragement? And remember what we're talking about. This is not the, yes, you can do one more sit-up, yes, you can abstain from apple pie this week. This is about real substantive life. Okay, when do we need encouragement? When we've sinned. The scriptures are filled with examples of people that are caught, stuck in sin, have sinned, are down on themselves, are demoralized, and they don't know what to do. So when you are in a pit that you dug yourself, and you've dug yourself down to the point that you can't climb out, what do? Have you ever been there? Huh? You got to.
You got to be humble too. And that humbles you real quick.
Or, I have to be willing to see. This is the difference between true righteousness and self-righteousness. A self-righteous person walks past the guy in the pit and says, "Well, he shouldn't have dug himself there." True righteousness says, "Somebody threw a ladder down for me in the pit I was in. I know what it feels like to be in the bottom of that pit. I understand where that guy is. He will never get himself out of that by himself. I think I'm going to go back home, get my ladder, drop it down in, and help that guy." Because there are times in all of our lives when we get to the point that we are not going to get ourselves out of our own pit. When we're ready to quit or give up or give in, this can apply to the big work you're doing in the outside world. This can apply to, "I'm not sure if this whole journey with Christ is worth the effort." It can apply to a marriage. It can apply to some other important relationship. It can apply to kids. Maybe you've got grown kids and they're frustrating. Right? Maybe you've got grown kids or kids at home, and it's just, you know, every day men make the choice to walk out of families that they've started. Maybe you or I are the one thing that's going to help to keep them in that. And generally it's not when we tell them just, "Well, you can do it, I know you can." Generally it's when you're candid enough about your own struggles so that they think that you, who look like you had it all going on, and they understand that you're struggling with stuff, and maybe you're still struggling, they get a new perspective on what life is supposed to look like. You know, all of us come into adult life and we have a set of expectations about the way life should work. And then when it doesn't work the way we thought it should work, we get frustrated and we want to leave. And we think if we just start all over again, we can build it differently and it will be better. And it's not. It's just, this is the nature of life sometimes. When the events of life take something good from us, how long does a person mourn? And who mourns with them? It's amazing, when you watch people mourn, everybody does it differently. For some people, it's quick, it's open, it's out there, and everybody knows that they're experiencing sadness. For other people, a couple of years go by, and they seem to have it ironclad, buttoned up, tight, everything is good. And then it's 2 years later that things start to crack inside them because of the way that they mourn. Who's with you during your times of mourning? And just as important, are we unaware of those around us who may need help? I mean, this is a very personal thing, and this is why I said at the beginning, what are you willing to do this year to live for something more than yourself? Okay, when frustration and setbacks occur, when the work of life and living is hard and long. I mean, who hasn't experienced this? Just let's stop right now. In the last week, have you felt underappreciated at some time? More than once? What, when you were getting me coffee?
You want more?
Yeah, I want more. Why? Do you feel appreciated now so you'll do it?
Well, yeah.
It's down to his purpose.
Do you do you want a hug, John?
What's that?
Do you want a hug?
No, not with you.
Oh, I was going to tell Vinny. I was going to rent Vinny for 5 minutes and have him give you a hug. All right, back to seriousness. What do you do at those times when you feel undervalued and underappreciated?
Sometimes you wonder if what you've done,
thank you, John.
Now, That's hard. It's kind of hard to put into. I think it's kind of hard to put into words. You feel like, all right, what's my purpose if nobody said, hey, geez, thanks a lot, and I got them back. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You go into an isolation, you withdraw, and you become no more than your internal self. And you start questioning everything that happens around you.
You go over there.
I'm just thinking about this in my own experience. And I talked about this a little bit last week, but let me just say it like this. There are people whose expressions of appreciation for the value of what has been done here for men in this church, their expressions have kept us at something that we probably would have stopped by now. Okay, I'll just say that, and that's enough. So here's the thing. What if there are good works that were started and stopped and we don't even know? Because we could have been helped by them, but we aren't helped by them because they were stopped short of helping us or helping somebody else only for a lack of the people who started it getting enough encouragement to keep on keeping on. Now that was a confusing thing, so you might have to... Do I need to repeat that so it makes sense? I believe there are probably good works that are started by sincere people who want to do something because they see a broken spot in the world and it makes them hurt and they start, but because they don't receive an adequate amount of appreciation, they become demoralized, demotivated, and they stop. And the good work that they began, they don't finish. What if it's our voice that makes the difference? And I don't just mean the people in this room, but what, you know, how many are here today? 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, I can count. I'm proud. How many weeks would it take for us to say something that would spiderweb out and reach 1,000 people? Almost no time. If you set an example of encouragement in your sphere of influence and it stuck with 3 people, just 3. How many people will you have significant contact with this week? 20? 30? Most of us will, right? If only three of those 20, that encouragement stuck to the point that they said, wow, that made a difference in my life. I'm going to go try that myself. And so on and so on. How many people could be contacted or touched by that within a year? It really is a lot, right? And I know that sounds like the butterfly effect, and it sounds like it ought to be on some cheesy Christian bumper sticker or something, but it really has power. John.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention this. I was doing a job over in New Jersey a couple years ago, and I took a buddy with me because he was didn't have a whole lot of work. He was in construction. We were running some cable and stuff. And the guys at this place where we were doing the work needed a roof job done. And I recommended my friend, who was very, very capable and very, very good at construction and things like that. And while I was off doing my thing, he said, hey, mind if I go walk with this guy? He's going to show me what the roof needs. He gets the job. It's worth well over $100,000. And it took a long time for me to just blow this off. He never even said thanks. I didn't want 10% of the job. I didn't want 5% of the job. I didn't want him to take me out to McDonald's. All I wanted was a thank you, and it took me almost 2 years to struggle with that. Why didn't he even just say thanks for the work? And finally, I was holding on to that for so long, and I finally just gave it up, and I said, Lord, you know what? It just doesn't matter. And I blew it off. I still talk to him and everything like that, but it's, you know, just, hey, thanks for the work, man, when I really need it. Never got offended. And I think sometimes these are the kind of people that we've got to deal with and put that into that perspective and say, well, he's just not available up here to be that way.
But suppose it had been more. Now, let's process this in context of a community of faith, we'll say. So suppose that you had more experiences like that. Could that embitter you? And suppose that there was more than just, hey, would you like to come along? In other words, suppose it cost you a little bit in order to help him. And there was no expression of appreciation. You did that 3 or 4 or 10 times. And after a while, you said to yourself, you know what? This is just not worth it. Now, if you're alone, and you don't have anybody that calls or that reminds you of the things that you kind of know, but you've forgotten, yeah, this does matter even if I don't have the appreciation. If nobody is close to you that can say, yeah, keep doing this. After a while, if you're out by yourself doing this out here, you'll quit.
Oh, yeah. And it's happened 4 or 5 times since then where you help somebody and they just, but you know what? Now, instead of getting mad and instead of cursing them out like I would have done years ago, I just shake my head and just move on because it's just not that important to keep grabbing onto that tiger and wrestling with it. It's just not. You know, God, it's okay. Because that's some people you just come to expect that.
And there's something that everybody else needs to hear. This nonsense that, well, now I'm a believer in Christ and so all my attitudes and everything change. No, they don't.
Yeah.
Everything about you is essentially the same inside, and it will take years for you to gradually process, unpack, and develop new practices and patterns in your life for living in a different way. So it might take you 10 years of struggling with how do I deal with frustration and bitterness and disappointment, and how do I develop better strategies for coping with that and expressing myself in that. It's not all magically going to go away. Yeah, you're going to experience the same hurts, resentments, frustrations as you did the day before you came to Christ.
Yeah, it brings you to a road. You know, I've had similar situations. And then you go, okay, well, this guy didn't even thank me. I'm angry. Hurt. Obviously, I did him a favor, and he doesn't even recognize it. So then you come to this point, well, do I offer him, or do I bring him out on another job? You know what I'm saying? That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
Because this guy really takes you off.
Yeah.
Do you bring him out to another job, or do you send him on his way, and you say, you know, I tried to help him, and be gone. You know, as a Christian, what should I do? That's a tough question. You know, do you reach out to the guy again? Do you think God's giving you an opportunity? Maybe get him to the point where he might say thanks?
I think it's a great opportunity, actually. I mean, because you can tell him, can apologize that you were mad at him for 2 years and holding that against him, and really, you know, use that opportunity to talk to him and let him know that, you know, maybe it was by accident, maybe he thought he thanked you, or, you know, maybe he would like to know, like, oh, I should be more mindful of thanking people. And you know, I started a really good conversation.
And it may work that way, sometimes it doesn't. But
you can take that opportunity and try it.
Absolutely. I've got one guy in mind right now where he never says thanks for anything.
Really?
And I've gone over and over, I mean, every opportunity after several years. I mean, I don't know, you know, I've tried to bring them to church, offered them, you know, when they, especially when the church is kind of open, they say, you know, bring a friend, talk to them about Christ. And he just refuses to grasp it anymore. But he calls himself, you know, because he goes to a Christian, he's associated with church. He knows there's a God. He knows there's Jesus. That's the way he was brought up. Doesn't practice it at all. At what point do you give up on that? I don't know. It's just a hard thing. I've never figured out.
Well, I think the point that Glenn is making is the fact that if that keeps on happening to you, do you get jaded and then you don't want to help anybody,
right,
because of the experiences that you had with 4 or 5 other people that just couldn't even reach out and say, oh man, thanks a lot, you saved my rear end this month.
Right, and sometimes there's a case where in order to get the right kind of, and let's stop, maybe just so that we appreciate the word a little bit different, let's just call it re-couragement. You had a certain level of ability to act. You had a certain level of boldness that allowed you to reach out and invite the guy to help or whatever. And we're not talking about just sharing the gospel stuff. We're talking about something's everyday life. Is your level of courage depleted to the point that exactly like your car needs more gas, do you need some re-couragement? Let's turn over to Mark. We're going to do one thing real quick. Ron has already done the 3-minute yawn warning. That tells me that I've talked too long. Ron tells me when it's time to start by his presence showing up here. Ron tells me when it's time to stop when he yawns. I did say Mark. You're kind of demanding, aren't you? Okay. All right, so we're going to do a little bit of background. We'll start at chapter 27, just so that we get this introduced. And Jesus went on with his disciples to the village of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they told him, "John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, and others say one of the prophets." And he asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter answered, "You are the Christ." And he strictly charged them to tell no one about it. Okay, so there's the introduction that Mark thinks is important to help us to understand the next component of this. Now remember, helpful to understand, Mark, we assume, is simply the dictated works of Peter written down by Mark. So this is Peter, in effect, telling a little story about this encounter and what he said at that time. So what's Peter's response? Says, "Well, you're the Christ." Okay, so what is the Christ? And we'll insert the word, the Messiah here. Okay, so Peter says, "Well, you're the Messiah." And then it says, "And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again." And he said this plainly. Now, I don't want to make too much of this. I don't want to belabor this too much. But Mark is probably the briefest gospel. He's not a skilled writer, and his writing is a little bit choppy, and everything is short. So when he inserts a detail, it's there for really good reason. And he said this plainly. In other words, there was no doubt in the minds of his hearers. So let's back up and read this again. "And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again." Remember what Peter has just said that he is? The Christ, the Messiah. Okay, so you understand I'm the Messiah. Here's what the Messiah must do now. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Okay? "Listen, Jesus. During campfire time at the night, I've been slipping off to the side a little bit and I've been reading up on what Messiahs do. And I've studied a little bit on messiahs, and I kind of have a feel for what they generally do when they show up. And one thing they don't do is die, because when messiahs go ahead and die, they're not really much help to people anymore. Jesus, I think we need to rethink this strategy. But turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. For you're not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." Okay, so let's back up. Notice what Mark says. Turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Why is that important? Remember, it's the details. This guy, short writing, whenever he inserts something, it's got to matter. This could be a contagion. If I let this kind of thinking take over in my followers, they're going to miss the whole point of the way we operate. Their thinking is that messiahs live on and become the heroes. Their thinking is not that messiahs lay down their lives for things. So he says, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." What does that mean? All right, so if you were a messiah today, right? The world needs help. How are you going to do it? There's a great debate raging in this country about how to handle a refugee crisis, right? Do we let people in? Do we not let people in? Do we be kind to them? Do we slaughter them all? Do we let this kind of people in? Do we not let this kind of people? All this stuff going on. Do you think that God is confused about what would be the right course of action right now? Probably not. We are confused a lot of times because we're just uncertain because we don't have the mind of God. We have the mind of man. There's nothing wrong with that. You can't help but have the mind of man. Why? Because you're a man. You just can't help but have that. It's not a fault. What Jesus is saying is you have a limited perspective. You're not understanding the big picture. There's more to this than you see. And calling the crowd to him with his disciples. So this is important enough. Like, if I were going to have this conversation, if I were Jesus, I have the mind of man. Okay, just tell you. If I were Jesus, I would call the followers, the gang. I would call them together around the campfire and say, "Hey, look, this has gotten a little bit out of hand. Let's unpack this a little bit. I think you misunderstood, and we need to talk about this a little bit more. Messiahs don't quite... Why would you invite everybody that was watching into this conversation?" And yet that's exactly what he does. And he says, and calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Forever would save his life will lose it, but whoever would lose his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." Okay, so we've read this so many times, it's pretty ordinary. But it's not ordinary to them because it's the first time they heard it. It's remarkably striking, new and fresh because it's the first time the words are used. What does it sound like to them? Take up your cross. See, it's unmistakable. You have to, and it comes right back to the idea up here, and he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed. And then he says, if anyone would come after me, he's going to have to essentially do the same thing. What do you think their thoughts were? Wow, it sucks to be us tonight, right? Who wants to do this? Whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. All right, so he not only lays out, here's all the ways you can lose your life, which is a lot, incidentally. It's a pretty broad path, right? But it's a very specific path that allows you to pick up your life and gain full life. You lay aside what the things that are important to you, if they're in conflict. Now, not everything is in conflict. We're not saying you can't enjoy any good things in life. We're not saying any of that. Have you ever had a major conflict between your dreams and something that you felt that God might want you to do? And if you can't answer that question, have you ever had a minor conflict in the moment between what you wanted to do in the next 10 minutes and what you suspected that God would want you to do? Right, let's just forget the big picture for right now, right? Forget grand and magnanimous things that you're going to do or a 20-year thing and all that. Let's just say in the next 5 minutes, is there a possibility that you could be tempted to pick up your life and do what you want instead of picking up your cross and doing what God wants? This is the ongoing battle of life. Which brings us full circle back to the idea at the beginning. Are you living for anything big and important and bold this year? And is it going to cost you something? Because if you're not, frankly, you don't need much encouragement, and a cute kitten poster will do you just fine. But if you're really living for something that's going to matter, I'll say it again, it's going to suck to be you sometimes this year. It really is. It's going to hurt. It's going to beat you down. And it's at those times that we need each other for encouragement. So I'm going to say the final thing here, and you can all breathe a sigh of relief that I'll be done talking. Don't keep silent about the encouragement that you need to offer to other people. And I don't just mean the people in this room, right? There are people that need to hear from you that something that you have done that they have done in the past mattered to you. There are people that are beat down and demoralized and they need to hear something from you that will pick them up. There are people who are trapped in their sin or the dysfunction and they need you to get involved in their lives in some way that is going to lift them out of the pit that, yeah, they dug it themselves. Are they down there because they deserve it? Yes. But you can make a difference in their life and help them get out of the pit. I'm done.